That's that guy Usain Bolt right there. Credit to NBC on the audio. He won again, shockingly. He's going to turn 30 by the time closing ceremonies. And it's his, what, third gold medal at the Olympics for Usain Bolt, and he did it with ease once again. Justin Gatlin coming in with the silver, and a pretty good race run by him. But, I mean, watching Usain Bolt between his semifinal and then the final last night, the guy is just in cruise control. I know that this isn't new, but the way he can just kind of get out, it's, you know, they're talking about how sometimes he struggles with his start, and that, I think, can be mistaken for being a slow starter, because they said that a couple of times. Well, if he doesn't get out of the blocks well, what? Well, what? I mean, he's still 6'5". He's still faster than every human being on the planet, and his final 40 meters is absurd. And you see it in just about every race. These guys get out to the front, and they're just, man, they're motoring. And then here he comes at the end, couple of big strides. They were saying last night, takes him 41 steps to get through 100 meters. Takes the rest of the guys at least 44.
The thing is, well, yeah, I mean, the size just and the length.
Just
yeah,
the size alone. The and then the fact that he has every bit as much speed as everyone else.
But, this is the thing where you hear people talk about, you know, him not having the greatest start out of the blocks. Well, I can understand where people want to mention that.
Right, like that's like one of those things where does he have a weakness?
In 100 meters, it happens so fast. So every movement that you have matters. So where he may not be the best out of the blocks, it hasn't really been an issue with him ever. So I guess the only thing you can do is nitpick at things and say, well, gosh, fastest man on the planet. Could you imagine how fast he could be if he could figure out how to get out of the blocks? He's also 6'5", trying to get out of the blocks.
He also owns the world record. So.
He's 6'5", trying to get out of the blocks, Nate.
I know.
And that is not an easy transition when you're 6'5".
You know, it's like spending all the last
year.
It's
hard enough for me to get up off the toilet, you know?
Hey-o. Well, you got that jumbo size, though. We can get you a custom.
Yeah,
anyway,
we need to get a custom throne. No, he needs a custom starting block.
We spent all year last year, like, looking at the Warriors and going, they shoot too many jump shots. And it's like, yeah, they ended up losing the finals, but it wasn't, you know, because they shot too many jump shots. But you have to find something.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not perfect.
When you're the best at things, people have to find something. And it's just human nature. I have no problem with it. No gripe with it whatsoever. But when you're the best at something, people are constantly going to be picking at the things that maybe you're not the best at. But
now,
it doesn't matter, because the end result is all that matters. So you can say anything you want about Usain Bolt. He won. He won for the third straight time.
Yeah.
No one's ever done that before. So that's fine. You can gripe about the Golden State Warriors, because they are the best shooting team that we've ever seen. They didn't win it this year. So yeah, that's fine.
But they are the best regular season team ever.
Yeah,
now.
And they're the best shooting team ever. It doesn't matter. They didn't win, but we're not talking about, you know, best team on the planet ever.
There is one example of someone that's
an
all-time great.
Don't point that finger at me, Nathan.
I'm pointing one finger at you, and I'm pointing four back at me or whatever. But anyway, the one all-time great that I haven't actually heard any weaknesses on is Michael Phelps. He won his 23rd gold medal over the weekend, his 28th overall medal in swimming. He's the most decorated freak that's ever existed amongst the freaks. You know, in his case, I don't recall hearing, he struggles getting into the pool. Like, we know his turns are the best ever.
Uh-huh.
We know that all of his, I don't know, what's his weakest stroke? I'm sure that someone has said it, but I don't recall anyone saying that he has any weaknesses.
There has to be a weakest for every, you know, it's just logic dictates that.
Right, so either way.
It doesn't matter. His weakest is still better than everyone's best.
And he's done so well that, you know, he said that he might be done before, but it sounds like this time.
Well, the fact that the Olympics are 4 years away.
Well, I know.
It's 2020 is a ways away. And what does that put him at? Like, how old is he? Is he 35?
I don't know if he's that old.
I don't know.
In front of me. But anyway.
But by the time, you know, 2020 rolls around. Yeah. So by the time 2020 rolls around, he would be 35. That's what it is.
So there you go.
So that's not a lot of swimmers competing at 35 and you know, just slaying people like Phelps has done his entire swimming career.
I think a lot of people would like to see him try it, but he had some thoughts on the future for his career.
So poetic. Watch out, Rowdy Gaines. Courtesy NBC, by the way.
Oh, he'll be on TV.
Watch out, Rowdy Gaines. Someone's coming for your job.
Maybe Mike won't commentate in all caps. I don't know. Hey, those guys are fun, but...
So I've got some crazy facts. Can I throw a couple out?
I think you should.
Yeah, okay. So 28 medals in his entire Olympic career, which spans from 19 years of age to 31. The only time he's one race he has not medaled in that he has actually swam, and that was when he was 19 years old. Mm. So that's a little bit insane. Do you know what his overall medal count is? How many golds?
Let's see. 23.
23. Do you know how many silvers?
No. 5?
3.
3. So 2 bronze?
2 bronze. Yeah. And those bronze medals came in 2004.
Back in the day.
When he was just a young pup.
Little scooter.
But, okay, so I found these crazy facts about his 28 Olympic medals. I've got some I want to read to you. Let's see if you can get
those this. Weren't them?
No.
Wow.
Holy cow. That was just math. If Michael Phelps was a country, he'd be ranked 32nd all time in medals.
That's weak.
That's actually pretty cool.
32nd. I mean, he's not even in the top 30 of countries.
Oh my gosh. But what? How many countries competed? I want to say there was like, oh God, I have it somewhere. Do you know how many countries competed in the Olympics this year?
No, this is your bit.
I think it was like 220 or maybe it was 150, but that's beside the point right
not
now.
Not top 30, though. Come on.
So one of the biggest things when it comes to Michael Phelps, and this kind of goes to our conversation when you're the greatest at something that people are always kind trying to nitpick at things. And one of the biggest arguments is like, well, he's a swimmer. He has more opportunity to medal than anyone else. Well, that's not actually the case because he has 5 more gold medals than any other athlete has medals of any color. All right. So I'm going to break this down. Soviet gymnast Larissa Latyena or whatever, and I think she was like in the 80s, 18 medals. A gymnast, that is the second most individual medals. The third most individual medals also goes to a Soviet gymnast, Nikola Andronov, with 15. The other three athletes that are tied for fourth with 13, 2 of them were gymnasts and 1 of them was a fencer. In the top 4 medals, like most individual medals all time in the Olympic histories, in Olympic history, only 1 of them is a swimmer. So to me, that absolutely destroys the theory that, well, he's so good because he has the opportunity to medal because he's a swimmer and he can do more events. I think that's complete crap.
I don't know. By that logic, like, I don't know, anyone has more opportunity. Like, why don't you, anyone that runs track, like, yeah, you've got the opportunity too. Usain Bolt, if he wanted to, he could compete in the 200, the 400. And listen, he might not be in the Olympics. That's the whole point,
yeah,
right?
But so,
like,
so,
you still have to get there. You still have to win the races.
We talked about Usain Bolt. He won the 100 meters for the 3rd straight time. No one's ever done that. So Phelps.
No, but what if they did
Phelps
like 100 meters, but you also had 100 meter backwards, 100
yeah,
meter karaoke,
oh yeah,
100 meter,
so now
100
you're,
meter
now
high
you're going off the rails.
Well,
but before we go to break, I've got this one other fact that kind of blows my mind. He's only 1 of 3 athletes in history to win the same event 4 times in 4 straight Olympics. So maybe Usain Bolt is going to tie and be amongst this group. But again, one of them was a discus thrower from 1956 to 1968. The other one was Carl Lewis, who won the long jump from 1984 to 1996, 4 straight Olympics. He won the long jump. But Michael Phelps, there's never going to be another athlete in our lifetime that is going to do what he has done.
Going to have more Michael
Phelps. That's my hot
take track.
Cannon.
Yeah, very nice. 8:30. We're going to have more of those, plus an opportunity with that to win tickets to the Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival.
Woo-hoo!
Coming up Friday, so
don't
miss it. Football opened up. 4 down territory is a thing that we do. In fact, it's it's something that we're thinking about doing next for you. So keep it here, breaking down the NFL on the drive. Sports 1140 KHTK.
Guys, here we go. No Colin Kaepernick yesterday. Is there any chance he is not on the roster come week 1?
Yes. I think there's actually an exceedingly good chance. If he's not going to be on the field, it's tough to be evaluated. And, you know, listen, the 49ers spent most of last season with 2 quarterbacks. I don't know what Chip Kelly's plan is this year, but we know they like Jeff Driskel. We know that Thad Lewis is on the roster. It's hard for me to see, again, if the guy's not on the field, how he's going to get evaluated.
That's the thing.
Especially when they were looking to trade him in the offseason.
I want to say, and the reason I don't feel like that went through is because of all the surgeries he's had, and, and the health issue was the big question mark. So they're hoping that during the preseason that he can maybe establish himself and let teams see him a little bit, let them see that he is recovered and rehabbed from all of his multiple surgeries. But the problem is, if he's not on the field, I want to say, no, he's not going to be on this roster come opening week. But if he's not on the field, I kind of think he's going to be, because no one's going to take him.
Well, but if they cut him, it's not their problem.
Yeah, but they've got the guaranteed money, and I don't know that they're willing to eat that right now.
I don't wouldn't underestimate the 49ers and their ineptitude. But
okay. The other QB starting that game yesterday, Brock Osweiler, made his debut for the Texans. Will he be the answer in Houston?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, obviously, this is a good place for Brock Osweiler to be after everything that happened in Denver last year. But he is their quarterback going forward. However, I think it's very funny that the backup to him is Brandon Whedon, who was taken far ahead of him in the draft and was supposed to be a far superior prospect. You know, I look at this as like, okay, he didn't have the best outing. It's, you know, opening of preseason, who really cares at this point? You've got to kind of play back into it. We all know that camp isn't really the place to do that. But, I mean, he is their quarterback going forward, but he does have someone that was supposed to be far better than him, just kind of chomping at the bit to get some opportunity.
Yeah, Brock Osweiler's not the answer in Houston. There's two reasons behind that. Nobody will ever be
the
answer for the Houston Texans. That place is quarterback hell. It's almost worse than Cleveland. They're right on the same page with one another. Not only can they never find a competent quarterback, any competent quarterback that goes there will turn incompetent quickly. The other part of it is I've never been sold on Brock Osweiler. I didn't think he was good in college. I didn't understand. I feel like he's made more out of his 6'8" frame than just about anybody ever could, because that's what keeps him in the league. He's big and strong, and he looks the part. The only reason I advocated for him last year is because Peyton Manning was just as bad. It's not going to go well for him in Houston, just like it wouldn't have gone well for him in Denver if he was there long term.
Guys, the most impressive player for the Oakland Raiders Friday night in Arizona was George Atkinson, 5 rushing attempts, 97 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Thoughts?
He was the guy that was most impressive. Was that a question or a statement? Because that's exactly who I was going to say. My thought is that it doesn't matter if you're doing it against third stringers, fourth stringers, second stringers, whatever it is. When you can break runs of 53 yards in the NFL, you're a special athlete. You're going to find a place on somebody's roster. He was very good. He was listed as their 4th-string running back. He went out there with nothing to lose. His stat line reflects it. He was marvelous, especially on a team. I mean, listen, they drafted Washington.
Right.
You know, we know they like Tywan Jones, but I still think that there are a lot of questions to be answered at that position, and it wouldn't surprise me to see one of those two guys cut in favor of George Atkinson if he continues to play this way.
Well, and I
probably not Washington, but they're going to have decisions to make is the point.
Either way, he played himself into the NFL for sure. I think he was very impressive, but I also think that Connor Cook was really impressive. But when you look at that, it's like, okay, he came in as a third string quarterback, rookie. He did really well in a preseason game. How much weight do you put on that? Is he even really going to get an opportunity during the regular season? No. So does that matter that he was impressive in the preseason game one? Not really, but I thought he was impressive.
Victor Cruz is still being bothered by his groin. Will the once great wideout make it back?
McGloin. Oh, it hurts so bad.
Nice. Wow.
I'm sorry. I can't. It's just too funny to me. Groins are one of the most difficult injuries to come back from. And it affects you in so
Misery.
Many ways. So the question here, there's no telling. It's like us answering that question is like poor guy answering the questions from the media. It's like, we'll look at it tomorrow. He'll rehab. We'll see how it goes. These are one of those things that when you put the 4 to 6 weeks or whatever the typical rehab time back from a groin injury is, you have to be so careful when you are bringing back a player from a groin injury, because if you do not approach it with, you know, the caution, this can be something that lingers all season long.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a no on this. I mean, I'm not saying that Victor Cruz will never play another down of NFL football.
Well, you have to choose, Nate.
Right, so, but he's...
No, you have to choose right now.
Shut your mouth. He's done. We're not going to see Victor Cruz again in any sort of relevant capacity. And it's too bad, too. He was one of the most...
Do you think it's an issue of whether or not he'll end up being cut? Do you think it's that bad?
No, I don't know about that. I think they're going to try to ride it out with him. But this goes back to, I mean, he lost his season to a knee injury in 2014. Then last year, listen to this, Katie, he suffered a torn fascia in his left calf that didn't heal properly. Ugh. And now he's got a groin issue. It's hard for me to not trace all of that back to one devastating knee injury.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems
You're
like
right.
he just hasn't been able to. He's obviously working hard to come back, but it just looks like it's not meant to be.
Yeah, well, when the injuries start to pile up, and you're 100% correct, you do not rehab one injury well or you come back too soon, it's going to be a waterfall of mm-hmm. injuries.
Especially
that
with
ensue.
The legs.
Absolutely. And the NFL is, I don't know
not
if you heard. It's kind of a physical sport.
Yeah, so they say. That's four down, man. Hey, guess what? We got a little more Raiders talk coming up.
Yeah, we promised we would do it.
Yeah, we're going to dive headfirst into the Raiders pool, which, to my knowledge, doesn't contain any algae yet. We're going to do that with Scott Bear, help him wipe the sand out of his eyes because it's early. It's all coming up on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Thanks to Greg Papa on the call there. He caught it here on KHTK. Raiders beating the Cardinals 31-10 in their preseason opener in Arizona. We're going to have Scott Bear, a Comcast Raiders insider, coming up here in about 5 minutes. Keep it locked.
So it's interesting. I'm interrupting you, Nate.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, like that was actually kind of natural until you said you're interrupting
me. So you know how earlier in the show we were talking about kind of how great Michael Phelps was, mm-hmm. and I had said I will never see another athlete like him in our lifetime? Well, someone texted in and was like, you know, we might actually see another athlete in our lifetime, Katie Ledecky. Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting stat for you. And this is just math. This is just how this works out based on her age, which she's 19, which is how old Phelps was in his first Olympics, but the number of events that she competes in and so on and so forth. It would take her until the 2036 Olympics to be able to match his medal count. And she would be 39 years old. So she is phenomenal. I don't want to take anything away from her because she is amazing. And there's going to be some great things coming from her in the future in terms of the national swim team and so on and so forth. But just to put into perspective how amazing Michael Phelps' career has been, I really believe it. No one's going to be able to match his greatness in our lifetime.
That is fascinating. See, I thought you were going to say something like she scored a touchdown for the Raiders or something on
No, I mean, I'm just...
Friday
I,
night.
I'm, this, it was
now
from,
I understand the, like,
the
I'm interrupting
line.
You part.
No, it was from the text line from the 916, and I appreciate people taking part in our show and calling and texting and so on and so forth. So I wanted to, you know, it just jumped out at me, and I just wanted to follow that up. So you know what? Get over yourself. We're going to talk to Scott. We're going to get him on the phone. We're going to talk Raiders. So I thought we could talk about the Olympics, you know, because it's going to be another 4 years before we do it. So calm yourself.
Or like tomorrow. We're like, hey, maybe about an hour from now when we'll have more Michael Phelps facts about his 28 medals.
You know
and
what?
An opportunity with that, Katie, to win a pair of tickets to the Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival on Friday.
Spirit.
At which you'll be able to meet Katie Christensen.
No, I'm not going to be there.
Oh, you
unfortunately,
turd.
I'm out of town on
what
Friday.
What does it matter with you?
Well, I'm sorry. When I booked a trip out of town, I was unaware of the Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival, which, by the way, I have been to. It was a couple years ago, and it was fantastic.
I remember that.
And
I think that might have been the first time I met you, actually.
Yeah, that was out at Cal Expo, mm-hmm. at the fairgrounds. And it was a blast, but from what I understand, where they have it now, it's like just taking it up several notches.
Well, it's the California Museum.
Tickets. Yeah, those
You'll
are some
get
hot tickets.
Samplings of the finest whiskeys, wines, and spirits from around the region at this Great Gatsby-themed party. So we've talked about the Great Gatsby theme. I don't know exactly what that means, but dress yourself up. Look good. Step back in time. Enjoy an opulent party reminiscent of the Great Gatsby era. So not only will we have tickets of that to give away, but you should go there Friday. It'll be fun. Coming up soon, we'll talk with Scott Bear. More on the Raiders it's George Atkinson III. I guess you would look at Mario Edwards and his hip injury. That looked like it was a really big deal at first.
Yeah.
He was spotted leaving the locker room on crutches.
Have you seen the footage of it?
I saw the footage of him being brought off the field. I can't often bring myself to
watch
injuries. Yeah. You know, if it takes more than one guy to get one of those dudes off the field, then
you don't really want to see the injury.
I don't seek it out. Yes. If it's right in front of me, then, you know, but I'm not actively trying to find it. So it looks like he's not going to miss a ton of regular season time with that, although we'll keep you up to date on that, and hopefully
They're actually hoping that he doesn't miss the first regular season game. So they're saying 4 to 6 weeks for the injury, which would put him, you know, on the early side, right around the beginning of the season. But again, my thing is, like, they're so deep on the defensive side of the ball that do you think it maybe is a little bit better of a game plan to give him a little bit more time?
Oh, absolutely.
Be sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that it doesn't become something that you rush him back. Mm. Maybe he could use another week or two to just completely put it to bed.
Yeah, I mean, he's a veteran. You got 16 games ahead of you. There's no reason to try to push things back. I mean, I guess he's, you know, kind of a youngster. It's his second season, but you know, you get the point. Like, I don't think there's any reason to rush back. Mario Edwards' spot on the team is just fine.
Yeah.
And you have a long season ahead of you. You're trying to make some waves in this division. No reason to rush. But, I mean, just in case there was, I think the guy that would tell us about it would be our guest right now, Scott Baer. He's the Comcast Raiders insider, and he joins us regularly here on KHTK. Scott, it's Nate. It's Katie. Thanks for making the time today.
How are we doing?
We're doing good now that we got y'all turned up. Bright and early here, the Raiders, they get their preseason off to a good start. They're 1-0. You know, Derek Carr played just two series, but there were some positives there. Now, Scott, the one thing that I took from it was that the first series for Arizona, they march down the field 73 yards. They give up a big play, the Raiders do, but they still hold them to a field goal. That's something that I see as one of the biggest positives.
Yeah, I do. And it's weird when you go through these initial preseason games and you've only got, I don't know, 9, 10, 11 snaps to kind of evaluate some progress. And sometimes in a regular game, they give up a 70-yard field goal drive and then shut them down the rest of the way. So, you know, it's tough with that small sample size. But that being said, the thing that I think was pretty clear is that the secondary is better. You know, they give up, you know, some yards there, and they're still trying to figure some things out. And David Amerson missed the tackle, and, you know, but Sean Smith, I thought, looked really good. And if that secondary is secure, I think with the volume of pass rushers they have up front, good things will happen.
Scott, I think that, you know, despite the fact that it's preseason, there was some great things to take from it. And I always caution fans in general to kind of cool off on the preseason. Don't get overly excited because, you know, it is what it is. But there were some good things that came out of this. And I thought one of them was George Atkinson III did a really, really good job. What did you like from what he showed? And what does that mean for him moving forward with this team?
Yeah, I thought it was important that he was decisive. And that's how he was able to break those big runs. There were holes, but he made a quick decision and broke to the outside. Basically, if you're a running back and you're squared up one-on-one in space, you should make somebody miss. And then you could turn on the afterburners. And he did that twice. That's a pretty important thing. What it means for him long-term, gosh, I don't know. He has been on the practice squad a couple different times, and it gets, you know, more difficult, you know, to make the roster from that position, especially because we know darn well that fifth rounder DeAndre Washington is going to be kind of the primary backup, and Tywan Jones has to fit in here somewhere and on down the line. I do think it's encouraging. We obviously know that George Atkinson Sr., I saw some texts from him were flooding into other Raiders, and he was excited for his son. I still think it's an uphill battle because when it comes down to it, running backs have to protect the passer. That's how you stay on the field, and some other running backs do that a lot better than he does. That's something that I think he needs to improve on, but this was a good start, and he is incredibly hungry to make this roster. He has to contribute on special teams in order to do that, and he was good on special teams. So I would just say he still has a lot of work left to do. He really has to give coaches a reason to trust him in those regards, but it was probably the most positive step for him as a professional player.
When you look at Atkinson, Scott, and obviously he's a little bit further down on the depth chart when you're talking about the Raiders, but does his performance, can one game like this in a preseason game ensure that, yeah, he's going to be in the NFL this season, that someone might look at that performance and it'll be enough for them to take him on?
Yeah, he does have some other tape there, and I think he's going to need to back it up a little bit, that he's maybe not, you know, 97 yards
right.
on however many carries he had, five or six. But I do think that, the more good game tape that you put out there, the more likelihood that somebody who needs a young running back would take that guy. You know, the only kind of setback is he doesn't really have any practice squad eligibility left because he was on it kind of in two separate seasons. And I think most importantly, he needs to get out there and really – you know, maybe catch a couple passes out of the backfield or protect the passer and put those types of things on tape as well. I know the Raiders really like him and they would give him a high recommendation to any team that was, asking about it.
Scott Baer, Comcast Raiders insider, joining us on KHTK. Scott, Matt McGloin has shown that he's a more than capable backup for Derek Carr, but Connor Cook looked efficient in his time on the field. So is there any chance that he challenges McGloin for the number two spot?
I don't think so. They like the hierarchy the way that it is, and I think they would like to have somebody with some starter's experience be able to go in should Derek Carr need to come out. Now, Connor Cook, I thought offensive coordinator Bill Musgrave did an excellent job guiding him through this experience. I'm actually sitting down and writing a story about this very thing as we speak, and I think Bill Musgrave, he gave him some screens, he gave him some shorter passes to build his confidence up. Because when you're a rookie and you're only getting the third team reps and things like that, sometimes it takes a while to adjust and learn a new offense and master a scheme where a quarterback has to know everything in a scheme that is, frankly, kind of complicated. So he's kind of made strides. You know, all rookie quarterbacks don't look great in the first week or in the offseason program when they're still trying to feel some things out. And I think that Connor Cook, while he said he had nerves, I think Bill Musgrave really helped him out because he's not going to see a lot of time during the regular season. Heck, he's not going to see very much time in the second and third preseason game either. So this was a rare opportunity for him to get some extended playing time. Bill Musgrave and Jack Del Rio, they need it and want it to be a positive experience, something that he believes he can kind of use as a building block. So I think that's what happened. That was a good thing. 7 for 11, he was efficient. He didn't really chuck it downfield very much, but we know he has that cannon in him. And I think even though he's going to be the number three guy, it is a real benefit having Matt McGloin there, who, by the way, is the highest paid quarterback. Derek Carr still working his way through that rookie deal. And I think ultimately having Connor Cook have 12 months pressure-free, unlike what Derek went through his rookie year when they went 0-10, that will really help him in the long run. Too often you can make some early mistakes coaching-wise with a quarterback and set him back or kill his confidence or something like that. And the Raiders were very mindful not to do that.
Scott, Carl Joseph coming into camp, obviously rehabbing that injury that, you know, predated coming in. But I'm curious, he makes a surprise appearance in this game. Is that a promising sign in terms of his rehab and recovery process in terms of being ready by the start of the season?
Heck yeah. he had said to us in no uncertain terms that he would be surprised if he played the first preseason game possibly.
Wow.
The first two, and I think that after he said that, he skipped one day of practice last week, and then he came back out, and he had an interception of Derek Carr where he looked like Spud Webb in the NBA slam dunk contest, going up 10 feet, snagging that thing. And I think just by the fact that his knee is responding to all of this activity well was a good thing. They also got his feet wet and got him out. He played 9 snaps, and that was all he needed to do. I mean, I'm sure going back and hindsight being what it is, I heard you guys talking about Mario Edwards. I'm sure Jack Del Rio wishes he would have pulled his entire starting
right.
unit after 9 snaps. But I think, you know, Carl Joseph, the thing that I thought was important is not, oh, did he make a pick or whatever. It's that he tackled somebody for real for the first time, and he had to catch David Johnson from behind And it was kind of a violent thing where he kind of tumbled out of bounds, and it was sort of an aggressive style, and he came out and his knee's fine. And it's one of these things for athletes when they come back from injuries, they need confidence in their feet, in their joints, in their appendages again. And I think when you start doing things, like, you're always going to be worried how it's going to react until you move past it. So I know it's just one tackle, and it sounds weird for me to be harping on it, but this is the preseason. So just doing that is one thing that he doesn't have to worry about anymore, that he believes, all right, I can go out there and do this. And practice was one hurdle. This was another. And just, you know, a couple preseason reps, I think, is going to ultimately help him. Now, he did say, you know, that he needs to communicate better with Reggie Nelson, the free safety. And that's going to come in time. He is a rookie. And I think, you know, Carl needs to be on Reggie's page, not vice versa. So I think once those guys kind of work that stuff out, they still have a month to the regular season, he'll be ready to go. And it's quite an indoctrination playing in the Superdome against the future Hall of Famer who throws for 5,000 yards every single season, and he'll probably get picked on. So he needs to be as ready to go as possible when he faces Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, got to get geared up for that because those guys don't slow down. You mentioned Mario Edwards' injury, Scott. Do we have anything more specific to exactly what went on with his hip, and how much time do they expect him to miss?
Yeah, exactly what went on. It's called a hip strain, which is, you know, it's probably just some ligaments inside of his joint that aren't quite right.
It sounds fun.
4 to 6 weeks. It looked pretty bad.
Right.
And seeing him in the locker room after the game, it didn't look great at all. I mean, he couldn't put any weight on his left leg whatsoever. He was struggling with crutches. He looked like his dog died. So when you look at those things, and then you hear 4 to 6 weeks, you know.
You think that's being a little optimistic based on what you saw?
I mean, based upon what you see, but then again, the Raiders seem very relieved, you know, that it could have been a lot worse. And 4 to 6 weeks, you know, like, what's a serious injury and what's not? I think a 4 to 6 week recovery for a strain, something like that, is probably realistic. But had this happened in week one, this would be a much bigger deal because he would be missing 4 and 6 games. Now, with the preseason the way it is, with I think I just said, 4 weeks left, you know, he might miss the opener and maybe a couple games after that, but missing 1, 2, or 3 games for a player like that is much better than missing 4 to 6. Now, the way he's been lining up, I don't care what the depth chart says, the Raiders kind of run this hybrid 3-4, 4-3 under front, and without getting too technical, he's like a closed end, and he rushes right next to Khalil Mack. And those guys working together side by side is a really dangerous combination that I think the Raiders want on the field, obviously, as much as possible. And having him, you know, this is a setback for this defense, but there's enough depth here with second-round pick Jahad Ward and Danico Autry where they should be able to kind of carry on and, you know, not have this be the end of the world.
Scott Baer, CSN Raiders insider, joining us this morning. Scott, I'm curious. I know it's just one preseason game, but there's obviously a number of guys in at this point in the preseason that are trying to either play themselves in or are on the cusp of playing themselves out. When you look at that game, who helped themselves and who hurt themselves?
In terms of helping themselves, I came into this game and really this preseason thinking that the Raiders didn't have enough depth at the interior linebacker spot. It was sort of Ben Heaney, Malcolm Smith, and Bust, really. And it was nice to see. I thought that Corey James played a ton of snaps. I think he played 51 on defense, and he looked pretty good doing it. He's kind of fast and aggressive towards the ball, and so is Corey Toomer. And those guys are going to be special team staples more than anything else. But you need injury protection at every spot. And I think that those guys really kind of showed well. And there's a guy that it's real easy to root for. It's a guy, James Kauser, out of Southern Utah, an undrafted FCS guy with about 50 sacks at that FCS level. And I thought he did well against the run. I think we all know that he can rush the passer. But those types of things on defense and special teams, you know, I think are important. you know, when you look at the undrafted wideouts, all these guys are competing for that one number five spot. And they're all kind of just clumped together, kind of like a nameless blob at this point, except for Johnny.
That sounds lovely.
Kickoff return. I know, right? But yeah, it's, you know, he had a good kickoff return, but he also had one clang off of his hands. And Jack Del Rio was, he's big on leverage and tackling. That's his major fundamental for defense. And they didn't tackle very well. And I think that's sort of an overall issue, even for the first game. He's going to harp on that all week, I can guarantee you.
Just to kind of play off of that, Scott, were there any presumed starters or guys that are number one on the depth chart that were disappointing within the context of a preseason game?
You know, I wouldn't say disappointing necessarily. I mean, I haven't gone back and watched the offensive line, but a pre-snap penalty from Osemele and some things like that that I would say need to get ironed out. I thought Latavius Murray was efficient, and Amari was just okay. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty clear from talking to Derek, I think you guys saw that they kept taking shots downfield. They were just running go routes and letting them fly, and he and Amari weren't, you know, necessarily on the same spot in terms of location or maybe route run. But it was very clear to me, and that's a benefit that you can take advantage of when your starters are basically set. You can work on stuff. And they were clearly trying to work on the deep ball. Carr hit one or two to Crabtree. And I didn't think that Amari was that great. I thought Seth Roberts was just okay. And DJ Hayden only played six snaps as the slot corner. There were some guys I didn't think were great. And if there was a miscommunication, now that I'm thinking about it, I believe with Carl Joseph and Reggie Nelson that produced a big play. David Amerson missed a pretty bad tackle, got juked out of his shorts. And, you know, those types of things I think will get ironed out. It's definitely nothing to stress about. Like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden they have a hole in their starting unit. I didn't see anything like that.
Magnificent Scott Bear joining us on KHTK, Raiders Insider. Find his work at csnbayarea.com. Scott, thanks for coming on. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
Have a great morning. So, we woke him up this morning.
You know,
we got him out of bed.
Hey, give a guy a break, man. Not everyone's on the same schedule as us.
And I am jealous of everybody that is not on our schedule.
Bringing the knowledge there. I mean, it's, you know, so a lot of positives to take from it. It sounded like the starters, for the most part, the things that were, I don't know, head scratchers were things that are easy to fix. You know, a false start penalty, a miscommunication at the top of your defense, those are things that you can iron out. The Raiders look to do it, and they still got a big win. More football on the way. Hey, you think Scott Bear's good? Sean Salisbury, we got our fire extinguishers out for him. That's when we return. 2 hours in the books on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.